electrical capacity, and this is the number one reason for the disaster we're now facing.
The polar bear, the ruler of the Arctic. There are 25,000 of them left in the world. They're on the verge of extinction. Animals need ice for hunting seals and other prey, but the Arctic is melting.
Our water resources are being destroyed. Natural ice caps, which are the main source of sweet drinking water for billions of people, are melting. These are issues that will powerfully affect the future of mankind.
Everyone here is praying for more rain, but is it already too late?
Lack of water will be the main problem for mankind in the future.
It certainly looks like a crisis after the worst drought in 80 years in the state of São Paulo. Reservoirs have reached rock bottom, and everyone's hoping the rainy season will bring a miracle.
With global warming, we're concerned about the future of the Earth's environment and worried about the continued life of human beings. We're concerned about environmental adversities that could happen to the Earth. For example, the rise of international waters, melting of polar ice caps, and extinction of many animal species.
Look, with the predicted temperature changes, all polar ice caps are melting. Why? Why is all this happening? Because the temperature is rising, and so Q, or heat energy, is increasing. The temperature on Earth is rising. When a place like Alaska and cold climate regions are going down, well, this temperature difference is being narrowed. What will happen if the temperature difference narrows? Distances are being narrowed. So that means depth is being added to. When it becomes deeper, it means we're moving into it. Due to the destruction we're causing to the planet, polar ice caps will melt in no time and water levels will rise. Then you'll see how many cities will be totally inundated, and this will lead to great expense and loss for humans. How many refugees will we have? What amount of humanitarian aid would be required for those inundated countries and to accommodate their people?
I am thinking about all the suffering you have caused us.
It's obvious that at some level we abuse the Earth to make money, but then we have to spend it, and the spending will probably increase.
I am trapped in a nightmare. I am trapped in this nightmare. I hope I wake up soon. This catastrophe is more than I can bear. But I am a forgiving mother. I cannot stand that my children vanishing.
The main discussion point here is, to what extent are we endangering the balance of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere?
This is the result of years of indifference toward the rise of fuel consumption by Earth's inhabitants, using fossil fuels and extracting amounts of carbon from the depths of the Earth and emitting it out into our atmosphere, with the oceans and water's low capacity in absorbing it.
Countries that produce oil and gas highly depend on oil revenues for their income. Well, if we discuss cutting emissions, that would mean reducing the production of fossil fuels, and that could somehow affect their income in the future.
Thank you. We humans, for our own interests, have been indifferent toward the Earth by gradually increasing the use of heating devices for transportation, as in cars, or fossil fuels that are used in industries, petrochemical refineries, powerhouses, and household fuels, and so on.
این محصول بی‌توجهی ما به حال زمین بوده.
We all breathe the same air. There may be less pollution in one place and more in another, but its effect on the environment can be hazardous for us all.
برای همه ما میتونه زیانبار و زیانبخش باشه.
Used to be so good, but my children started to forget about me. They started to only think about themselves and forgot about their mother. I don't quite understand why greed has taken such a hold of you. My children have brought disorder to this world.
We will see many people lose their habitats due to rising seawater levels in the future.
Consider the chain of islands that make up the Maldives, which are only 1.2 meters above sea level at most. The country will lose a large portion of its land with the minutest rise in open water levels. Residential areas will be destroyed.
Many people will be unable to continue living in their own countries due to the drought and lack of water.
You pointed out to wars being fought in the future over water. Unfortunately, I have to say that these wars have already started. The future is now. Since entering the 21st century, even in our own western region, there have been serious challenges over water resources. So discussions about war and the competition for having access to water resources have already begun. It may not be that serious now, but be aware of its complications.
A large number of people will have to be relocated because their cities will become uninhabitable.
These people will migrate to places across the world, but these other areas do not have a high capacity either. It will be one of mankind's major problems in the future.
What does it all mean? It will mean high expenses for human living, something we never thought about. We never thought that a big city could ever become uninhabitable, a city with millions of residents, but it's happening.
The people I see, these are people, Paula, let me explain, who are people with limited resources. These are people who did not have the wherewithal to get out of town. They didn't have cars. There's no way they could pay for a hotel room. They stayed in their houses because they had to. And then the water came up, and I'm sure there were elderly here, there were infirm here. It's just horrific.
Based on UN estimations, it's predicted that within the next 15 years at most, between 80 and 90 million people will be displaced from small countries that are made up of chains of islands due to global warming and climate change. Then we won't be dealing with migrants and asylum seekers displaced by war and conflict. We will have migrants fleeing environmental disasters as well. So we need to make people around the world more aware of this eventuation and find a solution for it. در جامعه جهانی باید با این ادبیات بیشتر خودمون رو مانوس بکنیم و براش تدبیر بیاندیشیم.
If I make a mistake here and go to jail, my kids and family will live the effects. I've done something wrong, but my child will feel its effects. If I make a mistake as a member of the global community, that mistake affects the whole. One multiplied by 1,000. One is a small figure. One is a small figure, but it's multiplied by 1,000. What does it equal? It equals 1,000. We have an index called M for mistake, which is a huge figure collectively. It's the mass of the entire planet. It's not at all a small figure. Now, even if you have an extremely small figure, you're multiplying it by a very large number. 1 multiplied by 1,000 equals 1,000. The 1 turned into 1,000. 2 multiplied by 1,000 equals 2,000. 3 multiplied by 1,000 equals 3,000. 0.5 multiplied by 1,000 equals 500. So we should be aware of what we're doing. که داریم چه میکنیم؟
زمینم داره خیلی تلاش میکنه که
The Earth is also making all efforts to somehow balance all the noise and demands we're imposing on it. However, our power, mankind's destructive power, is now seemingly taking the upper hand over the Earth's ability to regenerate itself.
Anyways, we should know that if the doors to the future open in this way, it will lead to a grave crisis.
Children, the economic factor is not a sustainable argument. I think about climate change and this disaster.
The components of social welfare need to be changed. The developing world should no longer be using the same criteria the developed world has defined as welfare for its people and follow their footsteps.
If we take an overall look, I think any project, any move, any industrialization, any process or any technology should calculate the temperature rise on the Earth in proportion with the delta T quotient.
بالاخره
Finally, humans can go on living for a week or two without food and a few days without water, but without air, we can't but survive for a minute. It is the most vital of anything the Earth's atmosphere has provided us with. We're using it, but on the other hand, we're destroying it, badly, and with high cost. We place it into a poorly manufactured man-made combustion device and receive toxic chemicals on the other side, which remains. It remains and moves around, and the Earth has no way to get rid of some of these toxic chemicals we've produced.
The economy has limited all activities to itself, and those who speak about the impact on the environment and the earth just talk and hold summits, but practically it's almost useless.
Concern. Just concern. What does that mean? What does being concerned mean? Static concern is meaningless. Concern should be dynamic. If you're concerned, you should do something to reduce that concern. That's a dynamic solution, not a static one. A static solution just adds to your concern and accumulates and is useless. Concern must be dynamic. What does dynamic mean? It means you must seek a real solution for it. It means you need to have a program.
I believe that if we carry on like this, making the earth sick and failing to do anything about this sickness, we'll be deeply ashamed in front of our next generations. They've had no role in bringing about this situation, yet they have to bear the consequences. Consequences that are getting worse by the day. So I can't do anything but apologize to the next generation who might be watching this film for the disasters that my generation is causing the environment and the earth.
I don't understand why. My children are destroying the one and only hope that they have. As my children, they have closed their eyes to the facts. Don't use your planet in the wrong way. We are a part of you, not separated from you.
The Earth has been stable and balanced due to its ecosystem. It carried on with its life way before we ever came along and started hurting and destroying it. Finally, just like a pendulum will do, if you place it out of balance, it will try to balance itself, reach its lowest energy level, and become balanced.
The Earth is our mother. It's beautiful, it's a creator, it's merciful, and we in return are being very bad children.
Well, it's perfectly true that every single one of us citizens of the Earth must do our share to reduce pollution. But to curb global warming and avoid its dire consequences, the countries most responsible must make an effort. The U.S. has caused more global warming than any other country. Research shows that from 1850 to the year 2011, the United States, a single country, produced 27% of the total carbon dioxide emissions of the world. no other single country was even close. Indeed, the U.S. even outdistanced all the nations of the European Union combined. Well, that's a wrap for this week, but join me again next week here on Aperture. Goodbye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Make no mistake about it. The war in Ukraine has been weaponized by Boris Johnson's regime for political gain at home, evidenced in his attempt to make turn Ukraine into some holy cause that will, if it continues along the present trajectory, take Britain and by extension NATO perilously close to direct military confrontation with Russia. We now present you an article written by John White, an author and political commentator based in Scotland. The piece is titled Boris Johnson's Ukraine Jaunt and what it says about Britain. Your average British Prime Minister likes nothing more than a war abroad to cynically try to improve his credibility and popularity at home. Margaret Thatcher, the so-called Iron Lady, used the popularity she gained on the back of the 1982 Falklands War to declare war on Britain's miners and their union, the NUM, 2 years later. Prior to the war, to take back control of the Falkland Islands, Las Malvinas, from Argentina, which had taken back control of the islands by force, Margaret Thatcher was so unpopular in Britain she was facing the very real prospect of a challenge to her leadership from within her own Conservative Party. The political capital she gained from the war to take back the Falklands saw her approval ratings soar and enable her to get to work on her long-held ambition to set about the structural adjustment of the British economy along free market lines. The miners were the main pole of resistance to this process, to the point where Thatcher infamously described them as the enemy within, in contrast to the Argentinian enemy without. Tony Blair revealed in his decision to lend British support to NATO's bombing campaign in the former Yugoslavia in 1999. As it neared completion, Tony Blair visited Kosovo like a latter-day divinity, lapping up the adoration of a people whom he had just liberated at the cost of around 1,500 dead Serbs, military and civilian. We saw the same phenomena when it came to NATO's military intervention in Libya in 2011, during which the British Prime Minister at the time, David Cameron, and French President Nicolas Sarkozy descended on Benghazi like two colonial overlords, languishing in the gratitude bestowed on them by a crowd of people for whom hell, not democracy, awaited as a result. Fast forward to today, and the conflict in Ukraine has been so cynically exploited by Britain's Boris Johnson, or Bojo to his friends, that you get the distinct impression he would love nothing more than for it to continue for the next 10 years. On his recent visit to Kiev, Boris Johnson took himself on a walkabout of the Ukrainian capital in the company of his Ukrainian counterpart, President Volodymyr Zelensky, basking, you could tell, in the opportunity to emulate his so-called political hero, Winston Churchill. There he was, striding around a deserted city amid a phalanx of photographers and assault weapon-toting bodyguards, resplendent in suit and his tie, alongside the permanently khaki-attired Zelensky, bursting with pride at being more Catholic than the Pope in providing Ukraine with more and more military aid by which to purportedly defend this put-upon outpost of Western civilization against Putin's special operation. Predictably and sadly, this is precisely the narrative that has colonized the mainstream media in Britain. And likewise, predictably, Boris Johnson received near universal acclaim for his courageous decision to visit the Ukrainian capital in the midst of a war. It was, of course, no coincidence that Boris Johnson's visit to Kiev took place just before the Metropolitan Police in London issued him with a fine for unlawfully breaking the very COVID lockdown rules his government introduced in 2020, at the height of the COVID pandemic. This makes Boris Johnson the only Prime Minister in United Kingdom political history to be fined for breaking the law whilst in office, a fact which in normal times would have seen him immediately tender his resignation to Her Majesty the Queen, in line with the country's feudalistic protocol, and stand disgraced forevermore. However, in this ill-begotten of Northern Europe, these are not normal times. On the contrary, this is a time of deceit, a time of corruption, racism and injustice wrapped up in the Union Jack and served up to the British people as the best of all possible worlds. Consider the latest wheeze of a Tory UK government that has proved happily impervious to the multiple scandals that have bedeviled it since coming to office in 2019. Fueled by a Brexit from the European Union, which has unleashed the carnival of the racism warned by its detractors rather than the freedom promised by its proponents, just unveiled has been the decision to send poor and desperate refugees crossing the English Channel from northern France in all manner of sea-unworthy dinghies and other vessels, victims, many of them, of UK foreign policy in various parts of the world, to Rwanda in Africa, to be processed and thereafter dumped. It is the very acme of racism in our time, a decision taken in the full knowledge that it will meet with the fulsome support of the country's Brexit heartlands in the deindustrialised North and Midlands of England, which today are the equivalent in Britain of America's Deep South. In other words, we're talking banjo country. The Prime Minister Boris Johnson is their guy, and he can do no wrong. That he is permanently dishevelled in appearance, lies with abandon, is ruthless, likes war and aggression, this only makes him more relatable to this particular demographic, at a time when Britain's political and national culture has never been more debased and degenerate. Make no mistake about it, the war in Ukraine has been weaponized by the Boris Johnson regime for political gain at home, evidenced in his attempt to make turn Ukraine into some holy cause that will, if it continues along the present trajectory, take Britain, and by extension NATO, perilously close to direct military confrontation with Russia. As the Russians get ready to unleash their major operation in the Donbas region, expect an uptick in atrocity propaganda. Claims of the use of chemical weapons, such as have already been made with regards to the Battle of Mariupol recently. And as the pressure grows on Boris Johnson to resign over breaking lockdown rules to attend a party in No. 10 Downing Street, expect ever more bellicose rhetoric and war talk to issue from his lips with regard to Russia. Napoleon Bonaparte once said, "Four hostile newspapers are more to be feared than 1,000 bayonets." The United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland is currently being led by an unscrupulous rogue, perfectly willing to deploy 1,000 bayonets to Kiev in order to maintain the support of newspapers in London. It really doesn't get any worse than that.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Russian President Vladimir Putin announced on Thursday that Russian forces have won the battle for the strategic southern city of Mariupol. Russian forces appear to be in control of the city, including its important but now seriously damaged port. At a joint appearance with his defense minister Sergei Shoigu, Putin declared that, quote, "the completion of combat work to liberate Mariupol is a success." The Russian president offered congratulations to Shoigu and Russian forces. But what is the strategic significance of the latest developments of the war? Mariupol is a major port in Ukraine's eastern Donbas region. It is situated between areas held by pro-Russian forces in Ukraine and Crimea, the Black Sea Peninsula that came under Russian control in 2014. Taking the city now will allow Russia to connect the two areas as it steps up its military campaign in Ukraine's east. Moscow can now secure more of the southern coastline, complete a land bridge between Russian soil and the Crimean Peninsula, and free up more troops to join the battle for Donbas, which is Ukraine's eastern industrial heartland. Despite Russia's announcement of victory in Mariupol, hundreds of Ukrainian troops and civilians are still holding out inside a giant steel factory in the city. Russian forces have tried for weeks to dislodge them, but to no avail. The Kremlin says there is no need for Russian troops to enter the complex passageways of the sprawling Azovstal steelworks. The Russian president ordered his forces to block off the industrial area so that, quote, "not even a fly can get through." Ukraine and its Western allies have disputed Russia's claim of complete victory in the city. But Moscow seems to be already looking beyond the southern city. Russian officials say the war's main objective is now capturing the mostly Russian-speaking Donbas region. Last month, Russian forces were driven away from the capital Kiev and northern Ukraine. Things will definitely not be smooth in the east either, as Western nations rush to funnel heavy arms into Ukraine to help it counter the offensive.
The Ukrainian armed forces were trained by NATO, equipped by NATO, and trained to the standards of NATO. So that is a major factor as to why the Ukrainian armed forces have put up stiff resistance to the Russian army.
U.S. President Joe Biden has announced another $800 million to help Ukrainian forces fight in the east. He said this week that Washington and its allies are moving as fast as possible to provide Kiev with the weapons that it needs. According to Biden, the U.S. and its allies are facing a critical window of time where they are going to set the stage for the next phase of this war. Much is at stake in Ukraine for major world powers. The war has been widely described as an escalation of the never-ending tug of war between the West and the Russian Federation. The outcome of the conflict could have far-reaching consequences and may shift the balance of power in the region and beyond.
The war in Ukraine is raging on. Russia's military operation in Ukraine is entering a new phase, which is focused on eastern Ukraine as the opposing troops remain locked in combat along a 300-mile front line. The Russian Defense Ministry has given the Ukrainian forces an ultimatum to lay down their arms. Ukraine has reached a preliminary agreement with Russia to evacuate civilians. But the United States and its allies seem to be determined to prolong the war. U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to announce within the coming days another military aid package for Ukraine about the same size as the $800 million one announced last week. It will include artillery systems, artillery rounds, armored personnel carriers, and unmanned coastal defense boats. It would bring the total U.S. military aid to Ukraine since the Russian military offensive in February to well over $3 billion. Kiev has called for additional weapons and support to stave off Moscow's new offensive in the eastern Donbas region, where Russian forces have been amassing after their withdrawal from the Ukrainian capital. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also said Canada would be sending heavy artillery and promised to provide more details. There are some reports that the U.S. is using the Ukraine conflict to prepare for wars against Russia and China. The U.S. military is training to fight in an environment heavily shaped by the Russian military campaign against Ukraine that was launched about 2 months ago. The purpose of this month's war game in California is to prepare for future wars against Russia and China. The report said the role players in the exercise at the Fort Irwin National Training Center in the Mojave Desert speak Russian. About 4,500 soldiers from the 2nd Brigade, 1st Cavalry Division are pitted against the fictional Devonian forces, the exercise's apparent stand-in for the Russians. The enemy fires rockets and missiles in the drill, all while using a sophisticated disinformation campaign to make false accusations against U.S. troops.
So I think that the United States, the U.S. corporations, the U.S. government, the officials within United States politics and economics have their head on straight enough to know that an open war with Russia is against their profit motive, is against their motive for world domination, because there simply would be no world left to dominate.
The U.S. has also warned China that it will face consequences if it helps Russia evade sanctions in its invasion of Ukraine. China has so far refrained from condemning Russia for the invasion and has said Moscow's legitimate security concerns should be taken seriously. There has also been growing tensions between Beijing and Washington and its allies in the Asia-Pacific region, including over Taiwan and the South China Sea. The Pentagon and U.S. lawmakers cited countering China in passing this year's $777.7 billion defense budget.
Just days ago, Israeli occupation forces attacked Al-Quds' Al-Aqsa Mosque, wounding more than 150 Palestinians while it was filled with Ramadan worshippers on one of the holiest days in the Islamic calendar. Now, in a fresh bout of violence, Israeli forces have again targeted Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Dozens of Israeli military forces have stormed into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds and restricted the entry of Palestinian worshippers into the Flashpoint holy site to secure the incursion of hundreds of extremist settlers to mark the Passover holiday. This is while the day before, the settlers entered the compound amid a heavy military deployment of Israeli soldiers to mark the Passover holiday and perform their own prayers. This year, the Jewish religious occasion coincides with the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan at a time when thousands of Muslims, predominantly Palestinians, usually stay at the holy site for worship, a rare convergence that will drive unusually high numbers of Jewish, Muslim, and Christian worshippers to the old city of Al-Quds. Far-right Jewish groups have even called for raids of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during the Jewish Passover holiday and the offering of animal sacrifices in its courtyards, which has not occurred since ancient times. Sacred to Muslims and revered by Jews, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Islam's third holiest site, has long been a flashpoint in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
And it's really pushing the Palestinians out of Jerusalem. It's trying to Judaize the city of Jerusalem. And we saw them attacking completely innocent people, you know, old people, women, children. So it's not really about security for Jewish worshipers.
Palestinians in the occupied territories have reacted to the raids by the Israeli security forces by going out to the streets in support of the worshippers. Israel, meanwhile, is trying to paint a different narrative. The Western-backed media is hard at work painting the Palestinians as the aggressors, even calling the worshippers rioters and terrorists. Israel says its so-called security operation is an effort to protect freedom of worship from violent rioters desecrating the site and endangering the public, but it has a tough task since scores of videos show the opposite to be the case. Palestinians are angry on a wide variety of fronts. They are suffering immensely due to the Israeli occupation. Additionally, they are amazed at the international community's indifference to the Palestinian suffering amid the Ukraine crisis. Furthermore, the paralysis of the Palestinian leadership has added salt to their wounds, who seems unable to do anything. The resistance group Hamas, however, has described the crisis as the continuing terrorism of the occupation and its crimes attempts to Judaize Al-Quds and to perform sacrifices in the Al-Aqsa Mosque to build its so-called temple during what they call Passover. The Gaza Strip, meanwhile, is at risk of another Israeli onslaught. Israeli tanks and armored vehicles have made an incursion into northern Gaza Strip, raising the possibility of another war.
Governments around the world need to stop supporting the Israeli aggressions against the Palestinians. And I can say myself, as a rabbi and as a Jewish person, the Jewish communities around the world have to stop supporting the Israeli aggression against the Palestinians.
A similar Israeli assault on Al-Aqsa during Ramadan last year sparked a military confrontation between resistance factions in Gaza, led by Hamas and Israel. Hamas has said this year Israel's assault on the Al-Aqsa and its worshippers is a declaration of war. And sure enough, early on Tuesday, the Gaza Strip came under Israeli assault, reportedly after rocket fire from the Gaza Strip. This is a sure sign that another war may be in the making.
Scuffles and unrest were reported in several spots across Sweden. Fierce clashes have broken out between police and protesters during demonstrations against a far-right group's intention to burn the Holy Quran. Violent skirmishes erupted between supporters of the Strom Kurs party and the opponents of the blasphemous plan. Clashes and demonstrations have been held in a couple of cities. Over a dozen police officers have also been injured since the unrest started. Meanwhile, police has backed the hardline party's plan, saying it would not revoke permission for a demonstration organized by the party, because this free speech threshold for doing that is very high in Sweden. That's why there have been reported clashes in locations that the hardline party either had planned or had demonstrations. Also, Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson came out in support of the far-right group, making remarks that have been deemed provocative. She said in Sweden, people are allowed to express their opinions, whether they are in good or bad taste. That is part of our democracy. These remarks only fanned the fire of unrest across the country and drew condemnations from the Muslim world, like from Iran. Iran summoned the Swedish envoy and condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran, saying the blasphemy was committed under the protection of the Swedish police. Tehran said it would hold the Swedish government as accountable and expects an immediate reaction from Stockholm against the perpetrator, as well as practical measures to prevent such incidents. On Thursday, the Hardline Party held a rally in a heavily Muslim-populated area in Sweden. At the demonstration, the party leader burned a copy of the Holy Quran, ignoring objections from onlookers. Counter-protests broke out with demonstrators setting fire to security vehicles after police ignored calls to stop the far-right demonstration. Strom Kurs is well known for its anti-immigrant and anti-Islam stances. Anti-Muslim sentiments have been on the rise across Europe in recent years in the wake of terrorist attacks in the continent, carried out mostly by Daesh sympathizers or the terrorist group's members who returned home following the group's defeat in Iraq and Syria. Muslim leaders in Europe and around the world have repeatedly condemned the terrorist attacks. Moreover, the rise of far-right ideology and the propagation of anti-immigration policies have also exacerbated the status of religious minorities in Europe. Also, different sorts of bans on hijab in countries like Germany and France, as well as closure of mosques and religious centers, have further pressured the Muslim community in those countries. Add to it the discrimination in recruitment and provision of job opportunities, harassment at workplace, and hate speech. Also, hate crimes against Muslims are rife in Europe. While the Muslim communities represent an indispensable minority of more than 25 million people, in the 27 European Union member states, a 2018 poll found that within the bloc, an average 37% of the population admits to having unfavorable views of Muslims. The mainstream Western media usually give coverage to Muslim matters through the prism of negative and counterproductive stereotypes. This biased coverage further promotes unreal stereotypes. In addition, European leaders have either been unsuccessful or reluctant in providing a convincing counter-narrative to Islamophobia.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. Another kind of repentance is for the sins that are related to the abandonment of an obligation. It is not something that we did, rather it is something that we should have done, but we did not. My dear ones, many of us are afflicted with the last case. We should have done certain things, said things, taken some action, signed a paper, but we did not as a result of laziness, idleness, and indifference towards our duty. This is a sin and we will be questioned for that. Therefore, in supplication of Makarim al-Akhlaq, it is said, Help me do things for which you will question me in the hereafter. One of the things which I have sometimes discussed and which is a moving lesson for the Holy Quran is the story of Prophet Yunus, peace and greetings be upon him. He was a great divine prophet, and remember, the Noon, when he departed in wrath, well, why was he angry? Because his people did not become believers. They did not listen to whatever he said for years. I do not know how many years. He invited them to God for many years, but it did not work, and thus he became angry and left them.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
If we compare it to the abandonment of obligations, that he likes for us commit, this seems no big matter. But God the Exalted questions this as well. He imagined that we had no power over him. Verse 87, chapter 21. He thought that God would not be strict with him, but God was strict with him. The reason was that he left. Elsewhere in the Holy Quran, God says, had it not been that he repented and glorified God, he would certainly have remained inside the whale till the day of resurrection. Chapter 37, verses 147 to 144. Look how important it is. If he had not glorified God, had not supplicated and had not said, Glory to you, I was indeed wrong, he would have remained inside the whale until the day of judgment. There is a good news in the following part of the verse. There is no God but you. Glory to you. I was indeed wrong. So we listened to him and delivered him from distress. And thus we deliver those who have faith. Chapter 21, verses 87 to 88.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Islam's holy book, the Quran, is the theme of this expo. Held every year in the fasting month of Ramadan, the International Quran Exhibition opened its doors after 2 years of hiatus, driven by the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the 29th edition of the event has brought here exhibitors from Iran and other Muslim countries to present their religious products. While the expo displays exquisite copies of the Quran, it also gives a chance to IT firms to showcase online versions of the Holy Book, among other religious apps and software. The art section is one of the popular parts of the event. It features paintings, calligraphy works, and conceptual artworks, all themed with the Quran. The holy month of Ramadan is believed to be the month when the holy book of Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad some 14 centuries ago. That's why this exhibition is held during the holy month, which is also referred to as the month of Quran. Every Muslim family has a copy of the Quran in their houses to read its verses and ponder its divine messages as many times as possible during the year, and especially in Ramadan, as the month of the Quran's revelation to the Prophet. Now, one of the major goals of this expo is to promote the instructions of the Divine Book, especially among the younger generation. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Braving the scorching heat while fasting, protesters took to the streets after Friday prayers across Pakistan to voice solidarity with Palestinians as tension continued to simmer in the occupied Al-Quds, where Israeli forces once again attacked Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Protesters here are outraged over what they call the double standards of the international community and the way they view Ukraine compared to Palestine.
Double standards is the biggest issue with international community. East Timor, South Sudan, Kashmir, Palestine, you name it. When Muslims are victims, they will always turn their backs on us. Therefore, I think it's about time to put an end to this collective behavior against Muslims on international stage.
Actually, we are being a Muslim, Al-Aqsa, the Muslims over there are brothers and sisters. If they're in pain, we are feeling the same pain in our body. The whole Muslim Ummah is like a one body. If one part feels is in pain, the whole body feels the pain. So we are feeling that pain and we are gathered here to tell the world that they are not alone. We are with them.
Speakers at the rally stressed upon the need of unity among the Muslim world.
We are who are gathered over here because of, as you know, the situation which is going on in Palestine. Israelis are continuously terrorizing or they're attacking the innocent people of Palestine. That's why we are gathering in the protest to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Again, you know, the Jews, army and the military, paramilitary forces, they are not letting the Muslims over there freely praying and offering their rituals of the Ramadan. And everybody knows this is the holiest month of Ramadan, and this is very sacred to the Muslim.
The Israeli aggression against Palestinians has once again escalated during the fasting month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians have been injured by the Israeli forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque over the past few days. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.
Amid ongoing violence in Palestine, hundreds of London protesters mobbed outside Israel's embassy to condemn the regime's ongoing onslaught. The Islamic holy site in the occupied capital, Jerusalem Al-Quds, has been targeted with daily raids by not just regime forces, but also Zionist fanatics who seek to desecrate Islam's second holiest site during Ramadan, the holiest month for Muslims.
I struggle to comprehend how human beings can do this to others. You know, it's occupation, but for the numbers of people that are happy to use their hate to hit and kill people, I, you know, the anger that I feel and the sadness and the heartache